This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly then. Yeah, hello, my name is Dan. I hope you're feeling brilliant and brave and inquisitive, because that's kind of what you need for this show. This is the place where only the most amazing, weird and dangerous bits of science are allowed in. Right here, we talk about the stuff that your teachers at school don't even dare to mention. Now, today, we're travelling to the coldest city in the world to walk on a river that is frozen solid with ice for 9 months of the year. Also, we'll find out how many stars are in the sky above your head. And speaking of stars, we'll chat to an astronaut who took his guitar into space to sing some songs. That's up in a little bit. First, we're catching up with our climate friend, Marina Ventura. Now, she's here today to talk about weather and what it should really be like at this time of year.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Now, we all like talking about the weather. In fact, people in Britain are well known for it.
The weather's quite good, it's quite hot and it's quite sunny.
Windy and very cold.
A bit rainy.
Freezing.
About a bit sunny.
Very windy. All of the leaves are falling off the trees.
Talking about the weather is one of the ways we start conversations, especially with people we don't know. One of the reasons for this is because it's something we have in common with everyone around us. If it's a rainy day and I get soaked in a downpour, you might have got wet too. And if it's freezing cold, then you're probably feeling it as well. And weather is a topic that everyone has an opinion about. Maybe it's chillier than it was yesterday. Perhaps you didn't expect to need a coat because you thought it was going to be a bit warmer. Not knowing quite what to expect means it's often surprising. That's why people like to read, listen to, or watch weather forecasts every day to help make sure they've got the right clothes on.
And with rain heading down south, tomorrow is set to be wet, so don't forget your umbrellas.
After all, no one likes getting soaked. But weather's quite a strange thing. Even if it's cold and wet on one day, the next day can be very different. And not everyone gets the same weather, even when they're in the same country.
Schools in the north of England will be shut today due to heavy snow. But in the Midlands, there's no snow, so schools are open as usual. Sorry, kids.
So as you can see, weather is constantly changing, which is probably why it's so interesting. As we've seen, weather forecasts help us to know what to expect, but even without them, we have a feeling about what the weather should be like at different times of the year. We expect it to be cold in winter and warmer in summer. Have you ever wondered why this is? Let's find out. Let's ask MapApp. He's great at explaining things.
It's all to do with climate. There's a saying, weather is what you get and climate is what you expect. And that's a great way to remember the difference. Weather describes what the conditions are like at a particular time and place, whilst climate is what the weather is generally like at that time of year. Here in the UK, winters are generally mild and summers, well, they don't get too hot. We have what's called a temperate climate.
So how do they figure out what the climate is?
Scientists constantly take measurements of the weather, things like temperature and rainfall, and they do this over many years. This gives them a lot of information and helps them to see patterns. These patterns help describe the climate.
Most people will never have seen those measurements, but we still know that our winters are usually cold. How come?
During everyone's lifetimes, people learn about the patterns in weather. And as you've described, because weather is a popular topic of conversation, these ideas have always been shared. What is interesting is that just like the weather, those patterns that make up our climate can gradually change too. And because scientists keep track of weather measurements from the past, they can spot these slow changes.
Fascinating, Mappy. Next time, we'll explore how climates differ in different parts of the world. See you then.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
And there's loads of Marina Ventura Climate Explorer episodes that you can catch up on for free on your phone or tablet. You can save them, listen whenever you fancy on the Fun Kids app, wherever you get your podcast from, and have a listen at funkidslive.com. Now, before we head into space to chat to a singing astronaut who went viral on YouTube recently, I want to say a quick hello to a hero from down here on planet Earth. Hello to Eva. Massive shout out to you, Eva. Thank you so much for leaving a review on the iTunes podcast store for this show. She says that she loves the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you very much. And she wants to know why your eyes can get bloodshot from time to time. Do yours ever do that? You know, maybe when you're tired and you've been up all night, your eyes start to get these worrying red lines that run down the side of them from your pupils. I'm not really that sure, Eva. I'm not an optician or anything, but I'd imagine it's something to do with your eyes drying out when you've been up for ages, and then they swell up, and it means the blood gets pushed out into the whites of your eyes so we can see them. I reckon it's probably something like that. I mean, really, we'll have to ask our expert Tom about that in the next few weeks. Thank you so much, though, Eva, for getting in touch. There's your shout out on the show. If you fancy one as well in the next few weeks, it's dead easy. Get to the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and leave us a nice review. Who knows, maybe next week I'll say hello to you. Get this right, on the phone is one of the most accomplished astronauts in the world. He's been the director of NASA operations, he was chief of robotics, he was the commander of the International Space Station. It's Chris Hadfield.
Hello, Dan, how are you?
How are you? Yeah, you're not in space right now, though, are you?
Well, I'm down here on the surface of the Earth with you. But yeah, I've been in space three times. I flew three different rocket ships, and I lived off of Earth for half a year.
It just blows my mind. So I've been thinking, right, the universe is obviously a massive place. So I'm going to start with a massive question.
All right.
What is the best thing about being in space?
Seeing the whole world every 90 minutes. You go around, imagine if you could go around the world 16 times today, where you could be here in London and 45 minutes later you could be over Australia, and then 45 minutes later you're back, and see the whole world until you get to know it like your backyard. It's an amazing privilege. The universe is massive, as you say, but boy, you never see the world like you see it from space.
So what's the worst thing about being in space?
The food, maybe. We have no oven, no microwave, no refrigerator, no freezer. So that it's sort of like being on an eternal camping trip where you have to fend for yourself. It's not bad. It's healthy. But it's nice to have good, fresh food when you get home.
So tell me, what do you have in the morning then? First thing you wake up, what's for breakfast?
Dehydrated scrambled eggs, powdered milk on granola. Sometimes we have like a beef jerky or something in place of, you know, bacon to go with your scrambled eggs, reconstituted orange juice, and then maybe an instant coffee. Not great, but good enough.
Talk to me about your very first trip into space. You've trained for so long. You're finally the astronaut. You're sat in the rocket, ready to blast off into space. What are you thinking?
I decided to be an astronaut when I was 9 years old. I decided I'm going to grow up to be something. Why don't I grow up to be that? And so to then be in the rocket 26 years later, lying on my back with my belly button pointed at the universe, thinking about the road that got me there, but also all the stuff that's about to happen. And you aren't a passenger on a rocket ship. You drive it. You're very much involved with it. So mostly what you're thinking about is how to successfully steer and pilot this rocket ship up to space. It's a very dangerous, complicated thing. But part of you is also that same nine-year-old boy, nine-year-old kid, sort of running around the cockpit with your hands up over your head, excited that, wow, this is really happening today. You sort of have both those people inside you at once.
Where were you going?
On my first flight, we were going to help build an earlier space station, the Russian space station, which they called Mir, which is the Russian word for peace, also the Russian word for the world. So they called their first space station the world, and I helped build it on my first space flight.
Now, we've all been on roller coasters, like traveled pretty fast in a car as well. Tell me about the difference, just what's going on in your body as you're catapulted up into the sky, pushed by fire and gas. gas. What's going on?
It's an enormously powerful series of explosions that's pushed you to space. It's crazy, the amount of force and power. And it's a little bit like a roller coaster or an immensely powerful car, but maybe it's more as if, imagine if instead of sitting upright in a chair, you tip the chair over backwards. So now you're lying on your back with your feet sort of up on a chair, and then more and more people start piling on top of you. And as they're piling on top of you, someone is jumping up and down on top of the stack of people so that you have the weight and you have the vibration and you have the weird position. All of that's going on, but you have to ignore it all because you're flying a spaceship and things go wrong all the time. So you somehow have to ignore this great oppressive weight on your chest and all the vibration and shaking of the power of the vehicle and somehow focus on the things that really matter. And it only takes 9 minutes, but it is an extremely demanding 9 minutes, one that I trained my whole life for.
Earlier on, I listed all of your accomplishments, you know, astronaut, director.
All of them?
Well, I listed quite a few of them, I'd hope, but okay. We need to add one more now. You're a kids author. You've got your first kids book out, and it's the phrase amongst authors is write what you know, and that's what you've done. Tell me about The Darkest Dark.
When I was little, I lived out in the countryside on a farm, and it was a big old house that would creak in the night with the wind. And we had horses, and I had to walk out to the barns when it was dark and climb up into where the hay was stored, up into the hay mow. A small, terrified little person crawling up into the complete darkness of the hay mow where anything could be lurking in the dark. And I was scared like anyone would be. I mean, it's normal to be scared of the dark. But I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to think of how you learn to be brave in the dark? And the fact that the dark is where you dream. And the dark is where you get ready for the morning. And then think about all the stuff you're going to do during the day. And that's what the book is. The book is called The Darkest Dark. And I even wrote a song about it, The Darkest Dark. But the idea of the book is it's okay to be afraid. But your life really occurs in how you find ways to be brave and how you find ways to not let fear keep you from doing the things that you're dreaming of. And that's what's in The Darkest Dark.
You've made a song for the book because one of the things that you're best known for as an astronaut on Earth is obviously you made the video, David Bowie's Space Oddity, got 33 million views now of you playing your guitar on the ISS. How long did that take you to prepare?
Oh, I've been a musician my whole life. I bought a guitar with my brother, a very inexpensive guitar, when we were about 10 or 11.
But you're not a director, though, and some of the shots on that video, Spielberg-like.
Well, I've always played music and played with friends and bands, and a lot when I got to the space station on my third space flight, I was writing music and recording music, and a lot of people started saying, hey, if you could, do a cover of Space Oddity, that iconic David Bowie song. And so it took about 2 hours. I sang it, and then once I'd sung it and some friends had put instrumentals, then I just, one afternoon, I floated around the space station and filmed myself singing the song. And I did it all by myself, just me and a weightless floating camera. And then I sent it down to my son, Evan, who took the audio and then the video, and he put it all together. And as you say, just the one site where my son, Evan, put that video up, it's been seen many, many millions of times. And beyond that, hundreds of millions of times in a lot of other places. So it's pretty incredible how music and art can help us see a place maybe more clearly and differently.
Chris, we've got about a minute left. So obviously the bravest guy I know and I've ever spoken to, but are you ready for your most intimidating challenge yet?
I think so.
Questions from the Fun Kids listeners.
Go for it.
We've got a few through the Kids App Pop Jam. This is from 3_CraftyCats, who says, did you bring your phone?
I could phone people from space, but a regular cell phone won't work because you're so high and going so fast.
This is from Princess Grace 20, who says, how do you brush your teeth?
Brushing is the same, but there's no sink and no running water, so at the end, you have to swallow the toothpaste.
This is from, interesting, from Jabez 021. Is the time different over there?
You go around the world 16 times a day, so what time is it? But in fact, we choose London time, just oddly enough. We live on Greenwich time on the space station. When the Queen wakes up, we wake up.
Lovely GMT, finally, from Marky Mark 1. Are there such things as aliens?
We haven't found any yet, but we're looking. We're driving around Mars. We're looking with our telescopes. There seems to be an unlimited number of planets, like a septillion planets. So probably there's life. But so far, we're the only life we know.
Chris, thank you so much. The Darkest Dark is out right now. It's by Commander Chris Hadfield. Thanks so much for coming on Fun Kids.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to talk with you, and nice to talk with everybody.
Right, it's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we talk about the most mean, evil, and deadly things in the universe. And today we're headed to one of the coldest cities in the world, Verkhoyansk. It's in Russia, around 3,000 miles east of Moscow. It's plonked right in the middle of the Siberian desert. Now, people call it the Cold Pole because it's known for its endless winters. And the Yana River is in Verkhoyansk. It runs right through the centre. You wouldn't know it. It doesn't flow much of the time, though. It is frozen solid for 9 months of the year. And if you think the winter has been quite chilly here in the UK, head out to the middle of the Siberian desert. You'll come back home and lie on a beach in no time, I promise. Now, in the winter, it's even more brutal than ever in Verkhoyansk. Temperatures fall to minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. There's just 5 hours of sunlight every day. Only Antarctica sees colder temperatures than Verkhoyansk, and that's at the very bottom of the whole world. Still, around 1,000 people live there. They're brave souls as well. Probably quite hairy people while we're on it, you know. Bushy, thick beards all covering their face, long hair just to keep out the chill. They're hardy souls anyway, and you've got to remember, anyone living in Verkhoyansk is some of the bravest people in the world, because this is one dangerous place. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and let's catch up then with our friends N and G. You know these, they're aliens, they're stuck on our planet, right? They're originally from planet Zog. The problem is, they've landed down here, but they can't get home because they don't have enough energy to power up the spaceship. So basically, they're travelling all around the world trying to find the right fuel to get them back up in the sky and through the universe home. And today, they're learning all about how energy moves around a circuit.
NNG's Energy Challenge. G, what are you doing?
Can't stop, N! I worked it out!
Worked what out? Why are you running around the house?
Circuit. I was looking on the Earthlings intramwebs and they said if you want electricity, you need some circuit.
I see where this is going. Stop running, seriously.
I'm just doing circuit. I'll have made enough energy in no time and we'll finally be able to get off this horrible little rock and back to Zog.
Stop. Seriously, stop. Stop it.
Sorry about that.
Electricity circuits have nothing to do with running around and doing exercises.
To be honest, I didn't feel like I made any energy. Just used my energy up. Gosh, I'm puffed out now.
Well, take a breather and come and have a look at electquizzery.com. I'm sure it must explain it all.
Welcome to electquizzery.com. Find out more about energy on Earth and post your questions for the Quizlet.
Right. It says electric circuits are collections of wires and electric components connected together in such a way that electric current can flow through them. They're everywhere, even though you might not notice them. Every electrical appliance you can think of contains an electric circuit.
So if there's a light in the circuit, or a motor, or something, then it gets the electricity as it flows around, right?
You're guessing it. And want to have a guess what happens if there's a break in the circuit?
I'm guessing that the circuit won't work. Hey, do all the bits of electricity get spilled?
No. If a circuit is broken, electricity won't flow at all. Sometimes breaks in the circuit can be helpful. Think about switches, like light switches. When you click them one way, it breaks the circuit and the light goes off. Switch them the other way and on.
All right. Stop fiddling. You'll wear it out. Gee, it's dark. Turn it back on.
So what are all these pictures on the website? Lines with shapes on top. Are these pictures of different circuits?
That's right. A simple circuit of a light switch will have a line travelling through a square to show the route the electricity takes. The bulb is shown as a circle. The power source is shown with a plus sign where the energy comes from and a minus sign to show where it comes back.
They're pretty cool. Shame it's not going to help us get back to song, though. I really thought we'd cracked it. Oh well, the search continues.
Watch out! Looks like we're going to fuse, G!
Here it comes. Whoopee! I love a bit of fusion.
Here it comes. Woohoo!
NMG's Energy Challenge. With support from National Grid. Find out more online at funkislive.com/energy.
Now, we'll talk about why laser pens are saving some sheep's lives in just a sec. First, let's get one of your questions answered then by our science expert, Tom. Now, he's here every week, so remember, if you've got a question that's niggling your mind, it's running around your brain, it's something about science that you just don't understand, well, send it over to my page at funkidslive.com and I'll try and get it answered for you. This week's question comes from Angel, who is 16, with an appropriate question with a name called Angel. How many stars do you think are in our galaxy?
Well, we estimate that there's about 200 billion stars in our galaxy alone. So that's a 2 followed by 11 zeros.
Where do we draw the map of where our galaxy is? How do we know where it ends?
So it's a cluster of stars in space. These clusters are usually far enough away from each other that we can distinguish which is where the galaxies are different. So we can see the space in between these galaxies.
And we've got 2 billion stars in our galaxy. Why do they stay where they are? Is there something huge that's in the galaxy that's drawing them all in with its great gravity?
Yes, there is. So originally, when the universe formed, it wasn't completely uniform. So there were areas which cooled and it didn't go uniformly. So the areas with more mass drew in all the other mass. And that's why we have these clusters of stars in these galaxies.
And how many galaxies do we have an impression that there might be in the whole universe?
I think there's about 100 billion galaxies, but that's the only galaxies we can see.
What's going on in between the galaxies where there aren't clusters of stars? Is it just empty?
It is empty, but that empty space has some quite interesting properties as well. So you'd think that because there's a lot of mass in the universe, that it's all attracting each other, that it's the universe would be slowly shrinking over time. But actually, there's energy in that empty space, which means that they're all flying away from each other and accelerating the rate that they fly away from each other.
What energy is it? Is there a name for it, or is it just regular energy?
It's called dark energy, which is a scientist word for saying we don't know.
Okay. but this dark energy is just pushing everything away from each other.
Yeah, and so eventually everything will be so far away that light won't be able to travel between each other, and we'll live in perpetual darkness.
It is time to find out what science has been in the news this week. Researchers in London have developed scanning techniques that can show what is written on ancient Egyptian mummy cases. Now, these are the boxes that bodies were put in back when the pyramids were first made, and then they were placed in a tomb, and they're made of papyrus, which is a type of paper kind of thing. And now a new technology has been invented that lets scientists read what codes are written on them. Also, plans are in place to plant more forests across England. The new Northern Forest will stretch from Liverpool to Hull, and the government is providing £5.7 million to plant trees across the width of the country. And finally, scientists think that shining laser beams onto hillsides could be used to scare away sea eagles from flocks of sheep. Farmers in Scotland, right, they have a huge problem with sea eagles swooping down and preying on the young lambs. But after tests, they think that the laser beams pointing on the hills, they may confuse these birds and warn them to stay away. Right, it's time for a good old Fun Kids Science Weekly competition. It's our Man versus Animal series. This time we're learning if the Jamaican relay team are quicker than a pack of wolves. And we're finding out who works best as a team.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
You join us just as the competition
competition is about to begin. We're pitting man against animal in our extreme athlete challenge. It's all about teamwork today. First off, we have the Jamaican 100-meter relay team who took first place at the 2011 World Championships. And waiting their turn, a pack of wolves. The Jamaican relay team take their positions and they're off.
Although speed is more important, the relay team know working together is what will win the race. Each member of the team is watching his teammates closely for the cues to make sure the baton is passed smoothly.
Amazing teamwork. And next up, the wolves, who are hunting a pack of gazelles. And they're off.
Like the relay team, they're watching each other for cues. There is normally a pack leader who will decide what to hunt. We can see they're working as a team by splitting up the herd. Wolves also use ambush tactics and can drive their prey into places that are difficult to escape from.
Certainly a fearsome set of opponents. The prey is no match for this team.
And I don't think we would be too.
Time to get out of here.
Let's hear it for the wolf.
One of our extreme athletes.
Extreme Athlete Challenge with the Society of Biology.
We've got loads more man versus animal adventures and competitions that you can catch up on for free on the Fun Kids app, wherever you get your podcasts from, and you can always listen at funkidslive.com. And that is it for another mind-melting, jaw-dropping and award-winning edition of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. I mean, sure, technically, yes, fine. If you're going to be pedantic, we've not won any awards just yet. But come on, if they do bring out a Nobel Prize for science podcasts, our name has got to be top of the list for that £1 million prize, I think is what they give you in the trophy for that. I mean, I'm not really interested in the money. Obviously, it's more from the accolades for my peers. Anyway, we're back next week with more of the most amazing, weird and dangerous things from the universe. Remember, you can find all of our science series for free on the Fun Kids app, wherever you get your podcasts from, and have a listen at funkidslive.com. And you can tune in to Fun Kids all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on the free Fun Kids app, and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.